early days of our order, Christ has been honored and revered by our Swamis as one of the greatest of illumined teachers. Many of our monks quote Christ's words to explain and illustrate spiritual truths, perceiving an essential unity between his message and the message of our Hindu seers and sages. Like Krishna and Buddha, Christ did not preach a mere ethical or social gospel, but an uncompromisingly spiritual one. He declared that God can be seen, that divine perfection can be achieved. In order that men might attain this supreme goal of existence, he taught the renunciation of worldliness, the contemplation of God, and the purification of the heart through the love of God. These simple and profound truths, stated repeatedly in the Sermon on the Mount, constitute its underlying theme, as I shall try to show in the pages to follow. Swami Prabhavananda, July 1963. Chapter 1. The Beatitudes. Matthew 5, 1 through 12. Before the time came for Jesus to give his Sermon on the Mount, he traveled all over Galilee preaching. And his fame went throughout all Syria, as St. Matthew said. The news spread of an extraordinary teacher, and crowds gathered to see him, as they have done for thousands of years in the Orient and still do at the approach of a God-man. They journeyed from Galilee and from Decapolis and from Jerusalem and from Judea and from beyond Jordan. And Jesus taught the multitudes according to their capacity. But his sermon, which contains his highest teachings, he reserved for his disciples, for the ones who were spiritually ready. He took them to a hillside, where they would not be interrupted by those who wanted less than his supreme truth. And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Every spiritual teacher, whether he is a divine incarnation or an illumined soul, has two sets of teachings, one for the multitude, the other for his disciples. The elephant has two sets of teeth, the tusks with which he defends himself from external difficulties, and the teeth with which he eats. The spiritual teacher prepares the way for his message with broad lessons, with his tusks, as it were. The inner truth of religion he reveals only to his intimate disciples. For religion is something which can actually be transmitted. A truly illumined teacher can transmit to us the power which unfolds the divine consciousness latent within us. But the field must be fertile, and the soil ready before the seed can be sown. When crowds came on Sundays to visit Sri Ramakrishna, the most widely revered mystic of modern India, he would speak to them in a general way which benefited them. But when his intimate disciples gathered around him, as I was told by one of them, he would make sure that he was not overheard while giving them the sacred truths of religion. Not that the truths themselves are secret. They are recorded, and anyone can read them. But what he gave to these disciples was more than verbal teachings. In a divine mood, he would uplift their consciousness. Christ taught in the same way. He did not give the Sermon on the Mount to the multitudes, but to his disciples, whose hearts were prepared to receive it. The multitudes are not yet able to understand the truth of God. They do not really want it. My master, Swami Brahmananda, used to say, How many are ready? Yes, many people come to us. We have the treasure to give them. but they only want potatoes, onions, and eggplants. Any one of us who sincerely wants the treasure, who seeks the truth, can benefit from the message given in the Sermon on the Mount, and can become a disciple. Christ, as we shall see in our study of his sermon, speaks of the conditions of discipleship which we must fulfill, for which we must prepare ourselves. He teaches the ways and means to attain to the purification of our hearts, so that the truth of God may be fully revealed within us. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. In this first beatitude, Christ speaks of the chief characteristic which the disciple must have before he is ready to accept what the illumined teacher has to offer him. He must be poor in spirit. In other words, he must be humble. If a man has pride in learning, wealth, beauty, or lineage, or has preconceived ideas of what spiritual life is and how he should be taught, his mind is not receptive to higher teachings. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Gospel of the Hindus, we read, "Those illumined souls who have realized the truth will instruct you in the knowledge of Brahman, the transcendent aspect of God, if you will prostrate yourselves before them, question them, and serve them as a disciple." According to an Indian tale, a man came to a teacher and asked to be made a disciple. The teacher, with his spiritual insight, realized that the man was not ready to be taught. So he inquired, "Do you know what you have to do in order to be a disciple?" The man said he did not, and asked the teacher to tell him. "Well," said the teacher, "you have to fetch water, gather fuel, cook, and do many hours of heavy work. You also have to study. Are you willing to do all that?" The man said, "Now I know what the disciple has to do. Tell me, please, what does the teacher do?" "Oh, the teacher sits and gives spiritual instructions in his quiet way." "Ah, I see," said the man. "In that case, I don't want to be a disciple. Why don't you make me a teacher?" We all want to be teachers. But before we become teachers, we must learn to be disciples. We must learn to be humble. "Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted." As long as we think that we are rich in worldly goods or in knowledge, we cannot make spiritual progress. When we feel that we are poor in spirit, when we grieve that we have not realized the truth of God, then only will we be comforted. No doubt we all mourn, but for what? For the loss of worldly pleasures and possessions. But that is not the kind of mourning of which Christ speaks. The mourning which Christ calls blessed is very rare because it arises from a sense of spiritual loss, spiritual loneliness. It is a mourning which necessarily comes before God comforts us. Most of us are quite satisfied with the surface life we are leading. In the back of our minds, perhaps, we are aware that we lack something, but still we cling to the hope that this lack can be filled by the sense objects of this world. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, "People weep rivers of tears because a son is not born, or because they cannot get riches. But who sheds even one teardrop because he has not seen God?" This false sense of values is the result of our ignorance. Regarding the nature of this ignorance, the Indian philosopher Shankara said that the subject, the knower, self or spirit, is as opposed to the object, the known, or non-self or matter, as light is opposed to darkness. Yet through the influence of Maya, the inexplicable power of ignorance, the subject and object have become mixed, so that man habitually identifies the self with the non-self. It's very easy to understand intellectually that the true self is different from the body, just as we are different from the clothes we wear. Yet when the body is diseased, we say, I am sick. Intellectually, we can understand that the true self is different from the mind. Yet when a wave of happiness or suffering arises, we say, I am happy, or I am miserable. Also, we identify ourselves with our relatives and friends. Anything happening to them seems to be happening to us. We identify ourselves with our possessions. If we lose our wealth, we feel as if we had lost ourselves. This ignorance is common to all mankind. It can only be removed by the direct knowledge of God. When we begin to feel a spiritual lack within ourselves, when we begin to mourn as Christ wished us to mourn, when we shed even one tear for God, then we prepare the way for the comfort of that divine knowledge. The kind of mourning that Christ called blessed is expressed in the imitation of Christ. O Lord God, when shall I be made one with Thee and be molten into Thy love, so that I wholly forget myself? Be Thou in me, and I in Thee, and grant that we may so abide always together in one. We must come to this stage when we feel that nothing can give us peace except the vision of God. Then God draws man's mind to himself as a magnet draws a needle, and comfort comes. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Ignorance and delusion are characteristic of the unregenerate mind. This ignorance is confirmed and buttressed by our sense of ego, our idea that we are separate from one another and from God. Egotism must be overcome if the mind is to be freed from delusion. Therefore, blessed are the meek. But why does Christ say that they shall inherit the earth? At first sight, this seems difficult to understand. Among the yoga aphorisms of Patanjali, yoga means union with God, also the path to that union, there is one aphorism which corresponds to this beatitude. The man who is confirmed in non-stealing becomes the master of all riches.